idea I've been working on about how to divide up structure file systems so that you can quickly check and repair them. I'm calling it ChunkFS, which is actually a terrible name because I decided it shouldn't be its own file system. Okay, so motivation. I have a lot less motivation than I used to because mostly people agree and know about this now. Basically, the time it takes to check a file system is getting bigger, and it's going to keep getting bigger because of hardware realities. So capacity is just going up faster. The amount of data on disk is going up faster than your ability to read it off. Seek time is staying almost the same. Seek time is very important because file system metadata, the stuff you need to read to check your file system, is currently and frequently not located in one big piece. You have to seek around to get to it. So I did some calculations based on my laptop, and I came up with, over this time period, 2006 to 2013, you're going to see 10 times longer file system check time. So my laptop, it's only about 7 minutes, so it'll be 70 minutes. And anyone with a big server, 3 days, it's going to be a month. Okay, that's bad. solid state, flash, all that kind of stuff, it's going to change this calculation to some degree. Disks are going to be here for a while. They're going to phase out or move to certain areas of computing, but you know, this is going to be a major problem in 2013 at least. Okay, so there's a lot of people talking about, yeah, okay, cool, let's do check and repair faster. You know, why do we even have to read the whole file system to do this? You know, can't we just check this one part of it without worrying about the rest of it? I mean, it's so easy. Well, so sort of the really simple, basic in-pictures explanation is that if I want to know something about this block of data, is it reference or is it an inode? Is it a directory entry? You know, some kind of data. Well, it could be referenced by anything in the whole file system. You don't have a back pointer. Even if you did have a back pointer, it could be wrong. That kind of stuff. So you basically just have to go and look at everything in the file system before you can answer a question about one single piece of data or metadata. Yeah. So that's a bad situation. Okay. So there has been some recent work on improving file system check and repair, right? Because you can just say, well, great, it's order file system size, but I can just make it go really fast, right? So recently there has been, Dave Chinner just presented the improvements in XFS repair, pretty nice, 75%. I just did some work to improve E2F SDK, about 50% if you have a RAID, same thing for XFS. You know, you need to have a bunch of disks before you can really get any improvement. But if you look at that, the numbers for how much time it's going to take to run FSDK, that's meaningless. You're going to be back to where you were in just a couple of years. So I think that the solution to this is repair-driven file system design. This means you have to actually think about this stuff when you're designing the file system. It's extremely hard to hack back in afterwards. It has major effects on the on-disk format. So you can do it, but you're kind of writing a new file system anyway, because it's not going to be compatible. So you might as well write a new file system. Okay. So this is just really quick. I'm not going to talk about these in any kind of detail. But you know, here's the kind of things that you would do differently when you're designing your file system to be quickly checked and repaired. All right. Simple data structures. the more complex they are, the more things can go wrong, and you won't know how to fix them. You know, more things you'll have to check. For example, turning on directory indexing in ext3, directory hash tree indexing, the htree stuff, increases FSDK time by 25 to 50%. And, I mean, it makes your runtime super fast, but it would be nice if you could make both of them fast. This one I really like. Where is my metadata? I don't care which kind of, you know, I know it's this kind of metadata. I know I want to read all of this kind of metadata. Don't make me read dependent pointers in order to get there. Just grab it. And if it's wrong, who cares? It's a performance optimization, right? And it also gives you hints about, you know, what you think this thing is when it's been corrupted. So this is, you know, all of this stuff enables the fast incremental file system check. So fast means, okay, we did the basic work to make it go fast because we actually care now. Incremental means you can do it piece by piece. I think it should be online too. You don't have to unmount in order to do an incremental check on some part of your file system. Sysadmins hate that, having to unmount. So this is just like duh, checksums, scrubbing, all that stuff. We know about this. We just have to put it in the next file system. So Chunkifest is really, you know, you want to do all this stuff, but Chunkifest, the main thing it's doing is this metadata isolation part, trying to keep all the little pointers in their own little worlds, so you don't have to, they can't be dependent on other parts. Okay, so I have a section here that's directed specifically at people who've been, at kernel developers and the like, who've been looking at a lot of different solutions to this. There's been some great ideas, there's a lot of discussion going on in file systems development lists. So, pretty exciting. I think there's a lot of elements from a lot of the different approaches which should be combined and added. But there's what I'm seeing is there's a lot of people who are talking about file system check and not really thinking about file system repair once you've checked it and discovered that it's not okay. So here's and the thing is that you're checking it, it's probably broken. So it's not good enough to say, I mean, it's nice to have that warm fuzzy feeling, oh, I checked it, it's good. But generally you're checking it because it's not good and then you need the repair to go fast too. You know, I know, and you can see my email last week to, file systems developed, so I feel strongly about that as well. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, somebody who's did that. Woo! Another round of
questions.
Oh, sure. Can you turn the board lights off, or are they? Okay, sorry. Matthew Wilcox was just making the observation that usually he runs file system check because the default paranoia file system check is 30 mounts on ext3, and I was just saying that. Yeah, I agree that's kind of probably not the right thing to do. Okay, so. Fast check and repair. I decided to give just this one little example that usually, like all the, there's a lot of different schemes to do this, but this particular example, it won't work. You'll have to do the walking down from the top again and traverse the entire file system. So this is going to be a double allocation bug. You have a piece of data here, and there's a bug, and you don't realize it's allocated, and you allocate it again. Like that. Okay, so, oh, look, hey, we both own this thing. So this is a back pointer. This is something that is smart to do. You should. It can be implemented in any kind of way, but basically it says this piece of data belongs to that piece of data. And you can do this either by having back pointers inside of your piece of data, or if it's like a file system, a data block, you can have a map somewhere else, like with checksums included and everything. Whatever the case is, you've got a one-to-one back pointer thing going on. And there's some stuff you can do with linked lists and things like this, but it still has the same problem, so very simple. Okay, so I've just created this new reference, and because I think I own it, I set the back pointer back to the second piece of data. Well, this other first piece of data still thinks that it owns this block. And when you're doing repair, check and repair, you need to be able to detect that both of these things are happening. That this is happening. And there's no, you can't use your cheater back pointer cheater. Your really cool, awesome, great idea back pointer. It doesn't handle this case. So you really need to be able to detect this and get rid of it, or fix it, or however you want to. So, Chunkfs file system. This is my particular idea. This is my particular idea. I've worked on it with Aryam Dandavan and Ted Cho and Zach Brown and a number of other people. Those are the top ones. So, very complicated. So here's your whole file system. I think that you should divide it up into self-consistent chunks that don't reference other parts. So a chunk is just a word that people use in storage all the time. but you can think of it as mini file systems. The namespace inside is self-consistent. The allocation information is only referencing things inside of this area of the disk. So I have this physical analogy, which I think will appeal to all of you. So this next slide is going to be what a regular file system looks like. But Okay. no doubt, all of you have experiences with this, and I'm going to have to untangle this when I get back to the hotel room. I'm not looking forward to it. But so I want to know, hey, what's on the other end of this? Oh, God. Right. Okay. So that's really painful, and you basically have to go through and unravel the entire ball of stuff. So this is what I'm trying to do with ChunkFS. Yes. Okay. So this is a chunk. This is a container. Most things are contained inside and coiled nicely, but contained inside this particular container. So if I want to know, where's an end? What that end connects to, I only have to look inside this bag, right? Except for a very few things that connect and communicate with other compartments in the file system. And the thing about those connections is that they do have forward and back pointers, and you can check them on both ends. So if they disagree, and you can also check to see everything that thinks it points into here actually does point back again. So you manage to solve things like the double allocation bugs, stuff like that. But yeah, the point is that whatever happens, whatever goes wrong inside of this chunk, you can walk the whole thing. You can do any arbitrary level of checking and consistency and all that kind of stuff. Pretty much any situation you can think of and fix in a big file system, you can fix in order of the chunk size time, which is, you know, 1 gigabyte or 10 gigabytes or something like that, with a much smaller order of file system size addition. So, okay. So this is all fantastic and wonderful, but otherwise, if this was easy to do, then people just have 100 file systems. Yeah, problem solved, right? Well, the issue is how to put it all back together again. You have two things that you want to share and not be constrained. You want to share your available space, and you want to not constrain your namespace. So, and that's what happens when you have 100 little file systems. That's what you do. So all the excitingness about ChunkFS is really about putting all of this stuff back together in a way that you can preserve the metadata isolation. Okay. Oh, I'll actually get to spend some time on this because I went faster. All right. So you're going to notice a lot of repetition here. So this means that all of the space has been used up inside of this chunk. So there's other reasons why you would want to cross chunks, but in this case you have to. So I've got this file, it's 10 bytes big or one block size or one block in size, and I want to write another block to it, and I can't because it's all full. So this thing I'm calling a continuation inode, it's probably the wrong name, but you allocate another inode over here. The way you allocate it in such a way that you can quickly find it again. When I'm looking at chunk B, hey, what are all of the pointers in this chunk that connect to chunk A? I need to be able to make that mapping happen. Right now, I just create a directory named, A, and then I put all of these continuation inodes in there. And important back pointer. So I can check everything inside of here, and then all I have to do is if this inode hasn't been stomped on, I follow the pointer forward. If it has been stomped on, and I follow it back again. If it has been stomped on, if it's deleted, if the pointer is gone, I go do a check on all of the other chunks to see what they believe they point into. And so I can follow this back pointer and say, oh my god, it's gone. Okay, well, I better get rid of this. And that's my demo, so keep that in mind. Okay, so the directory outgoes out to chunk. You want to add a new entry to a directory. The chunk is full. Bummer. Interesting thing about Unix is that directories look like files. So just use the same old thing. This is presuming you're doing a create and creating a new thing, but I'll handle the next case. So yeah, you just create another, wow, that's really irritating. You just create another inode, you hook it up, do your little continuations, and then you create your new file, and voila. So when you're reading this directory, you're going to read all the entries here. You're going to read all the entries here. Continued somewhere else to read those entries. Just keep going. Okay, so hard links are our friends, not. Very annoying. So there's a bunch of easier cases of this, but this is the hard case for both the directory you want to create the link in and the thing that you're linking to are in a full chunk. And it turns out to be not difficult. Continue both of them. Woo! So you've got directory continuation, inode continuation, just hook them up. That's cool. It's okay for this to be one direction because we're inside this chunk. So, you know, we'll just check the whole thing, read everything. We can figure out if that's correct or not. But we do have time for questions in the middle, if you can get in between my words. So. All right. So you have all these great continuations, but it's kind of starting to look a lot like a big cable ball again, because you have so many little connections between things. And this could happen like, so if your trunks tended to run out of space at different times, you could end up like going from here to here to here to here to here to here back again, all on the same file. And that would be extremely annoying and wasteful. So. So just, you know, don't be a complete dork. Only have one continuation inode per file, per chunk, and be able to tell which parts of the file it contains. So I actually have another slide on how to, which I don't have here, yep. I have another slide on how to make the lookups in this go fast. It's, you know, we know how to do this for file systems people. It's not a huge deal. So, but right now we'll pretend we just do a check every single continuation I know to get off everyone. Actually, that's what the code does. Uh-huh. All right. So, this is a cool, awesome idea, and you know, I thought it would work, but there's a lot of things that you think will work until you actually implement it. So, I had some ideas on how to do this. First option is to take an existing file system and prototype it inside there, and I did think very seriously about doing that using my favorite file system, EXT2. Emmett Good, who was working at Kansas State University at the time, actually did do a prototype this way, and you know, it seemed to work, so that was a good sign. Another way you could do it is to put it on top, you know, like I said, these are like little file systems. Oh, okay, well, let's put little file systems on the disk, and then let's put a little layer on top of it. So this is another exciting stackable file system. Ah, not really. But you have to sort of shim yourself into the middle of the VFS, and that's, as I discovered, not particularly pleasant, but it got the job done for our prototype. I don't think that's the way you should do it. There's all sorts of interesting problems. If you have 100 little file systems and it's a journaled file system, you have 100 little journals, right? guessing this is bad. And then on top of that, whenever you do a cross-file system, cross-chunk operation, you have to have another journal to keep all that straight or some other sort of solution. So that seemed not such a good idea. However, fine for a prototype. So this is what I ended up doing, and I'm going to demo in a second. I think the long-term approach is, you know, repair-driven file system design. Get into the file system design before it's all been finalized and people have an on-disk format that they're pretty attached to. make all this stuff work inside. Fortunately, there is a really fancy, cool new file system in the design stage. It's called ButterFS or B3FS, but all the cool kids say ButterFS. Chris Mason is doing it. Excellent file system hacker at Oracle now. and you can go take a look at it. There's code and it runs. Just please don't try to run it out of space because it will panic. It's cool. But yeah, so he's all in favor of this. I would love to be able to put this into ButterFS. All right, so excitement of demos. I am going to run some stuff live, and then I did a TypeScript of running it successfully that I'm going to use anyway because it's just easier to navigate and talk to you guys about what it's doing. So, yay. Okay, so I'm using my favorite UML. It's perfect for file systems developers. There's a few tips you need to know, like turning on synchronous writes and I've got a web page about this somewhere. UML tips, I think, something like that. So, but yeah, I'm using UML. It's awesome. blah. And I'm running it inside of GDB, which has some interesting issues with signals, and but it's nice. I like it. That's not what I want. I don't want that. So this is just check out my lovely debugs view. This is the part that actually creates the file system. It writes over the with loop devices and things like that. It writes over the device with a poison pattern so that you find bugs sooner rather than later. There's nothing on there that should be there. And then it just does my test, which is a lot of things like link and symlink. Take a look at that. Okay. All very exciting. Yeah, so all of that stuff works. Hooray! Okay, let me kill it. This is how I'm rebooting because unmount doesn't quite work. I have some dentry referencing reference counting problems. So another option. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I've got a file system image sitting out there, and what I'm going to do is corrupt it and repair it using my extremely fancy shell script file system repair. This way, you can always start from the same point. All right, so I stomped in an inode. You can actually use a debug fs to do this, but I thought this was more fun. Ran fsck on it. Oh, hey, there's an inode that doesn't look like it should be there. Let's deallocate it. So we found some blocks that were no longer referenced that said they were referenced. Okay, fix that. Blocks count is wrong. I know bitmap's different. Great. Okay. Count. All right. So now we just checked all the rest of the chunks and did the cross chunk fix. And this is just showing that. So what I stomped on was the inode for this file. It's gone, and its continuation is also gone. So now we've got a completely self-consistent file system. All I had to do was run fsck on one of the chunks, and then run this cross chunk check. All right, so this would be a good time for questions, and then I'm going to move to my typescript script. Hey, Paul. Yes, that's bad, and you shouldn't do that. So. Yeah, I do. It's three little ext2 file systems. And they should be hidden from the namespace, but, you know, this is a... Yeah. Oh, are you talking about it at create time? I mean, I don't know. do you have a particular problem you're thinking of? Oh, yeah, my script is very dumb. How's that? Yes, actually, I still might have that data. I sent an estimate on that to FS Devel last year in like May or something like that. I can pull those up if we have extra time. But basically you've got a. Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks. The question is, okay, so what's the what's the overhead of doing the cross chunk test pass? What's the how much is it going to cost to go back and look at these continuations? Is this going to completely get rid of? Is this one getting no? Yes. How many cross? Right. Okay. Chunk size. How many chunks? How do you decide this? What's the data? You want chunks small so that the time to check an individual chunk is small, but you want them big so that the time to do the cross chunk pass is also small. So if you have really, really super tiny file systems, all of your complexity ends up going into continuations, and it takes just as long or maybe longer. If you have really big file systems, then you have a regular file system. And right, so there's a happy medium in there somewhere. Several of us, Amit Good, Karuna Sagar, and I did some work using ext2 as a model to see how many cross-references there are going to be. And then I did some estimates using seek times and stuff like that to figure out how long each pass should take. And it was good. So but I have the numbers somewhere. We can try to find them.
Do you have a big flag?
Yes. So how do you know which chunk that you need to check? Is that the question? Yeah. Well, you need fancy things like being able to listen to your disk when it tells you that something went wrong. Hey, this block is bad. EIO handling for real. Checksums would be really helpful. Hey, my checksum's wrong. Oh, I should check this whole chunk. Take it offline. I'll do it. Or just in the course of every day traversing the file system and doing stuff, you notice, wait a minute, this is wrong. So those are the ways that you detect. You can't, you know, silent data corruption, silent data corruption. So, yeah. Sure. Well, that would all be like for a real implementation. I plan to implement it inside of ButterFS, actually. But yeah, there's a lot of really nice things you get out of the chunk architecture. You can, for example, only load the root chunk, and then only load the next ones as you actually reference them. You can take unreferenced chunks and go and, you know, check them. Or you can just freeze it, check it. It's not going to take very long. All the I/O operations will stop. You know, if something bad actually happens, you fail them all with EIO and redo stuff. It makes shrink and grow really easy. You could keep them read-only. There's just all kinds of really cool stuff. You have like more pointer constraints. So one of the things you do is you check to see if your pointer is outside the bounds of your file system, and you know it's a much smaller bound right now. So yeah, answer your question.
Sorry, if the other one really I didn't get that big problem. Like too much memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The question is how important. So when you get a really messy old aged file system, how important is it to have a good allocator that tries to keep things simple?
Yeah. So the repair.
Right.
Every
So. So if you have if it's really full and lots of inodes are allocated and every chunk can ouch, and okay. You do need to be smart and try to keep down the continuations. I mean, the ideal world is where you have, you know, one continuation between each chunk. And okay, you've got a bunch of stuff inside of a chunk, you just have to deal with that, right? You size your chunk appropriately so that that's a reasonable amount of time to do that, so. But yeah. Being smart about, like when you're running low on space, you could end up putting just a few bytes in a few blocks in every single chunk for a file. That stuff, so yeah.
So
it's important.
Like, when doing
well, usually you're only checking one chunk. Sorry, something about queuing up chunks for checking correctly?
Or?
Yeah. Oh, lucky. Okay. So, how much interference is there between checking chunks? So the inside chunk check, it has no effect on any the checking of any other chunk. It's only the cross chunk pass that has to interact with each other, and that pretty much you should do single threaded. But the point is really to make that fast. So, okay, I'm gonna move on to the demo. Or sorry, the script. Okay. See, I got this done way ahead of time. This is YOML booting up. Exciting, exciting, exciting. Okay, so this is my test script that I ran, the first one. There's a bunch of really fun hackery with loop devices and creating loop devices at offsets and things like that. Because I want to get it all in one device for the chunk of nest layer, but I want to have small devices for each ext2 file system. That's very exciting. you can take a look at my scripts, see my comments on that. This is a fun bit. So I'm using extended attributes to record these forward and back pointers and the area of data that this continuation contains. So this is really convenient because rather than actually have to be smart in my makefs, I just put it in the shell script. So these directories are for things that have been continued from another chunk. So slash chunk one, slash two, obviously don't need slash one. Slash chunk one slash two is going to contain all of the continuations from chunk two. So that's how you go back and find them when you're doing a check. Quickly. Okay. So it's mounted. Woohoo! Very exciting. And all of my debugs view. Basically, you create you have a top level chunkfs inode dentry file struct, and then you have hanging off of that, you have your client one, and you have to do all this translation. It's very annoying. This is where I do all of those creates and makers, links, and stuff like that. It doesn't really get interesting. This is pretty much, you know, okay, make it work, make it work. There's a lot of output. there we are. Okay. Oops. Okay. Create a continuation. So this is the only part that's actually even slightly interesting. And I've... I've implemented the part where a file can grow from one chunk to another chunk. So what's happened is we've just written up to the first part of the continuation I've restricted to 10 4K blocks. We've been writing, we've hit this point, we say, okay, we can't write to this file anymore, we need to create a continuation. So let's create a continuation, goes and allocates file in another chunk. That ends up being inode 23 in chunk 2. So we hook them up.
So how does it make the chunk create the
next? Plus one. That would be something that you would want to do with a smart allocator. Okay, blah, 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 do the stuff. Oh my god, there's so many things. Oh, look, DD completed. I was DDing, you know, 11 blocks. Yeah. Plus one is fine as a start. Yeah, yeah. It's just when it gets fancy when chunks are getting full. And it depends. You'd want one that has some space free. this is a very similar problem. File systems have been dealing with exactly this problem in the form of allocation groups, and it's the same sort of trade-offs. So. Dave says, XFS already did that. Yes. Well, I mean, there's. Well, and when I started looking at this problem, I thought, oh, cool, you know, I'll just do this on break up FSTK on allocation groups or block groups or whatever, cylinder groups, whatever your file system calls, the same basic idea of, you know, I'm going to do allocation on this unit size. Basically it comes down to the fact that any allocation group can have data allocated in it by inodes from any other allocation group. They can have links from directories in any other allocation group. So it's not an interesting boundary when it comes to namespace and check and repair, but it is an interesting boundary when it comes to allocation still. So a lot of things are just going to be basically the same for chunkfs. Any questions right now? So are you saying, hey, databases aren't going to be happy about this? how you've written the chunk of us? Oh, the doers, yeah. Well, usually databases hate having a file system between them and the device. I don't think this is going to be inherently more difficult. There's just this little tiny extra bit of metadata. Already files are spread out all around the disk, depending on how your allocator goes. Oh, no, I haven't. I mean, I have ideas, but no. I want to call up Chris and talk to him.
The value of chunk of us is that it takes terrible repair out of this algorithm to trace it.
Yes.
Now that we have all the back corners about this, instead of reading all the items, and it sounds that if I am like to read the back corners.
Yeah.
So I wonder what would be different about this when you bring it to chunk of us.
Okay. So Zach's question is, Butterfuzz is doing all these very good, very smart things that you should be doing with back pointers and linked lists of, you know, you can verify end links and block allocation bitmaps and stuff like that without traversing the entire file system. So that's what my double allocation example was for. So it is really good to make file system check go very fast inside each chunk, and Butterfuzz will go way faster. But I think there's still a lot of value to this metadata isolation idea. So what would be different is Butterfuzz would no longer be allocating anywhere it wants to. There would be some sort of container that when it crosses it, it's going to do this back pointer.
The design is to have multiple allocations.
Right. And so you just do a little bit of hardening on the allocation group boundary.
Yeah,
so.
In the double allocation case, that one for Butterfuzz.
No, double allocation bug is a bug. Transactions doesn't help, so, right? Okay. Okay. We have this discussion in ZFS. Well, our code is going to be perfect, so, you know. All right. So this is just showing you the guts of exposing the guts of how continuations work. So. This is the file that crosses. You can see that it has got very strange permissions. it's this size. It's 11 4K blocks. This is the underlying original first inode in the first chunk. It is only 10 blocks long. Exciting. And this is the continuation in chunk 2. This is my back pointer, so I can figure out if it still exists. Hey, inode 29. But I just know that this is inode 29, so it's a demo. that's how the naming scheme works. And it is one 4K block, so ta-da, it works. Okay. This is how I reboot. Save kill. I just cut out all the booting up stuff. So what this is going to do is corrupt it. I'm going to go through the corruption and repair case in a little more detail. Oh, by now? Okay. Yeah, I'll just super quick, because this is the interesting bit. Okay, corrupt it. So this is where you run FSCK on each one of the chunks. And oh my god, there's something wrong. Okay, the other ones are fine. We didn't have to check them, but it's just the way my script goes. Now we do the cross chunk. This is this ridiculous little script. What I'm doing is I'm going through every single chunk and saying, what are your references to the one that was corrupted? Because I need to check to see if I now have a dangling pointer back into that corrupted chunk. Because when you take away data, you have no idea where it was pointing anymore. So this is the only way that you can resolve that problem. So so now I'm going to use debugfs to say, hey, is inode 29 still there? Because I would like to know that. It isn't there. File not found by XC2 lookup. Great. So now I tell the world, hey, there's an orphan continuation, and delete it. Great. So now I've just cleaned up after this corruption. There's no longer all these dangling little bits hanging out in other file systems. Remount it. Excellent. All the nasty stuff. Not big as a gun, right? We smashed it and took it away. But the important thing is we want to make sure that the continuation is also gone, and it is gone. But all the file system is consistent, and it mounts, and everything is beautiful and checked. So, ta-da, there's, all right, next bit. So I want to say thank you to a bunch of people. People paid me to work on this, including myself. I started working on this at Intel. EMC paid me to do work on this. They think it might be useful eventually. And I funded the last 2 weeks' development. So I work on the design, as I said, Ariane, Zach, Ted, extremely helpful. I talked to a lot of people about this too. Couldn't put everyone up here. Emmett Good and Karuna Sager helped write code. And I want to thank Jeff Bonwick because he hired me to work on ZFS at Sun. And I thought file systems were stupid, and now I don't. So. there's a really terrible, terrible patch against something ridiculous, 2623mm RC1, something like that. Code, documentation, all that stuff is there. Yeah, I wouldn't actually try to run it or develop with it. So. I showed you it worked, right? Okay, time for more questions.
We've got 5 minutes for questions now.
I'm sorry, what? Yeah. So Paul's suggesting that you might have a tree of containment. And yeah, I mean. No, you can't just tune your allocator. Because you have to know for sure that, yeah. So, I mean, you can estimate performance using that.
Can you extend?
thanks, Grant. The softball question is, can you grow ChunkFS and from your original size to a bigger size? Yes, trivially, which pretty much any file system can do if you think about it for 5 seconds. The interesting part is that it really could do. I'm sorry. Did I say okay? I mean, it's true, right? People are like, "Well, my file system grows." I'm like, oh, yeah. Hard thing is shrinking because you have. I want to know if that block is referenced, and if so, I need to change that reference to show where the block is now. This actually turns out to be really, really, really hard and painful. In ChunkFS, all you have to do is check this one chunk because the reference to it is inside that chunk if there is one. It could do shrink really quickly. That same sort of, there's a lot of stuff you can do with the chunk. What do you do about inode numbers in case of shrink? Yeah, that would mean that you're a file system developer. that would be painful, and I've spent some time thinking about it. I think there's a number of file systems that have to do basically inode number indirection or redirection in some cases. It's not pretty. So yes, that would take work. You can go backwards and fix the pointer to it because you have a back pointer. So yeah. So you would probably have to remount when you shrunk it. So. Oh, I'm sorry, there's something about NFS, because your NFS file handle includes your inode number, and if you change your inode number, then bad things happen. So, I mean, you could have like a runtime redirection thingy, and I know, it's gross, but less gross, it is possible. I mean, because if you're shrinking any file system, you're going to have to move that inode somewhere, and if you have there's things you have to do. Okay.
What's next?
In my life? Yeah. Oh, well, next step in development. it was a little open-ended, so. What's next in development? Well, I would really like to talk to Chris and Zach about why ButterFS could use some more of this ChunkFS 11. And I would love to be able to work on ButterFS to make this happen. So we'll see. I have a file systems consulting company, and so I have to work on things that pay me. But yeah, that's the next plan. I'm going to abandon this prototyping. So I don't think it's the right way to go. We've got 3 more minutes. So the question is, if you had a big file system and it had a lot of stuff in it, and you got a bunch of errors all across the file system, would it perform, would ChunkFS perform better, or maybe would it even perform worse? Well, if every single chunk is corrupted, then no. And there would be some extra overhead. I mean, it would really depend on the implementation. So yeah, this is predicated on the idea that probably only part of your file system has been corrupted, and that you can detect that. Oh, and you can also do like scrubbing really easily because, so for example, you could, when you mount, go ahead and check just a couple of these chunks instead of the whole thing every 30 remounts, right? Because it's just a little tiny extra little thing that you can do. It doesn't take much time. So, yeah? Yes. So if the chunks are on different disks, would that be good for parallelizing file system check? Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Completely independent until you get to the cross chunk pass. So, and yeah.
If I don't desaturate your IO.
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't you be saturated by IO in the seek time? So if you do this, you have to create much more longer seeks if you
So
four times at the same time.
So the question is, Wouldn't this slow down doing parallel check of chunks? Wouldn't this slow down overall check because you'd be seeking back and forth a lot? That's why Anthony asked for multiple disks. So if you've got more than one disk arm and a chunk is entirely on one disk, then yeah, you can move do it in parallel. If you're sharing, so this is the thing I was talking about at the Lightning talk at the kernel miniconf, knowing whether you can have more than one stream of I/O without interfering with the other I/Os is something you want to know from your underlying storage, and something that's pretty difficult to figure out right now. I think we should probably end on that. And thanks, I really appreciate you coming.